Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 7, The Gilded Oubliette. June 23rd, 2008. In the center of the dilapidated ballroom, an equally broken-down Audra Lamalle sat at her vanity table in her black silk dressing gown. The walls were dingy, a pale moiré silk yellowed over time. Rows of long, ornately framed mirrors flanked by columns each showed their age with a layer of cracked and flaking gold leaf. Several pieces of haphazardly arranged antique furniture dotted the enormous room. Trash, mostly empty liquor bottles and crumpled cigarette packets, littered the once glossy hardwood floor, a sign of the usual party from the night before. High above, an elaborate stained glass ceiling diffused the bright late morning sunlight. It filled the room with dappled, multicolored light. In the midst of this dreamlike ambiance, her silver decanter at the ready, Audra Lamalle poured herself a tall, acid-green wake-up cocktail and began adjusting her head screws. She was bald except for a few tiny wisps of gray hair. A fine network of blue veins pulsed sluggishly beneath her pallor. Her face was completely colorless, without eyebrows or eyelashes. Only her golden eyes blazed like flames inside a living skull. Anchored firmly into her head, the golden screws crowned her with a permanent halo of sorts. Tiny golden hooks radiated around the screws, digging into the flesh and holding the skin taut. Lamalle poked around her forehead with a long screwdriver until she maneuvered it correctly into place. She turned the screwdriver until it clicked. Then she moved to the next screw and did the same. Gradually, the sags and wrinkles lifted and disappeared as she ratcheted them away, click by click. She adjusted the tension over her eyes alternately, in a vain attempt at symmetry. Pressing the screwdriver into the screw released the tension and she could start over. Madame struggled with some apparent difficulty. First, one eye appeared surprised, while the other seemed sort of sad. Then one eye looked angry or suspicious, and the other appeared ecstatic. After a half hour or so, the adjustments were complete, and she was reasonably symmetrical. She practiced several faces, making sure her features fell naturally back into place and remained there. After some fine-tuning, her face settled into a perfectly suspended mask of seductive beauty, except for the twisted spirals of stretched skin around the screws, which looked red and angry. She dipped a cotton ball into the green liqueur and delicately dabbed at each. When she was finished, she brought the cotton ball to her lips, sucked it dry, and flicked it away. She had several cigarettes burning at once and alternated long drags off of each while she continued her regimen. She tossed the screwdriver into one of the many trays that crowded the vanity table and pulled a large pallet of makeup towards her. She tapped a long cylindrical ash into an overflowing marble ashtray and filed through the many pots of colors with her long purple fingernails. Deciding on something like a tan, she began to apply layer after layer of different tones over her face and ghostly shoulders. The veins faded away, and the end result was a reasonable facsimile of a glorious glow after a long holiday. Lamalle appraised her handiwork in the three-way vanity mirror, approving the results of the highlights and shadows. The guise of beauty had begun to form. Thankfully, her escort for later that evening possessed both of her favorite qualities, obscene wealth and acute myopia. She added just a few subtle smoky shadows of mystery and golden glints of happiness to the corners of her eyes. Then she etched in some graceful eyebrows and stuck on her false eyelashes. A large, glossy red mouth finished the look, and then she turned to check her reflection once more in the mirror, while smiling fanatically with her enormous, chiclety teeth. She slid a large roll of double-sided tape over her bony wrist, took another swig of her cocktail, and staggered to her feet. Wobbling slightly on her towering heels, she picked up a poisonous-looking atomizer. She sprayed repeatedly until a large cloud of noxious gardenia formed. Lamal sauntered through the falling vapor to an open armoire that contained her wigs, a vast collection of every style and color imaginable. She tore off two links of the double-sided tape and crisscrossed them over the top of her head. Lightly tapping her pensile cheek with a long fingernail, Lamal decided which look would fit her mood du jour. She chose one of her favorites from the 80s, the long blonde lace front she called her Jerry Hall. She took the wig off of its form, slipped it onto her head, and pressed it down into place. She swung her long blonde curls over her shoulder and turned to appraise her wardrobe. Most of her gowns were either on the floor or strewn about the furniture. The few things that were actually on hangers looked more like costumes, including a sexy sailor suit and a naughty go-go nurse outfit. She filed past these frowning, then smiled, eyeing the suitably seductive midnight blue number on the end of the rack.
My, my, we are up early, aren't we? And Versace, at this hour? We do mean business, don't we?
Mr. Derventer had emerged from a hidden door at the back of the ballroom. Unfazed, Madame Lamal adjusted her gown and returned to her vanity table. She opened a new velvet box containing a few baubles from the previously mentioned admirer. When she was sufficiently draped in diamonds, she turned to face Derventer.
Oui, ma chère. This one is very generous with the largesse. That's right, dear. Ladle them on. The more distractions, the better. Don't you worry, ma chère. I've earned every single carat.
Derventer shuddered and crossed the room. He surveyed the rather shabby condition of the once majestic ballroom with disdain.
Audra, how many more years of this? One geriatric millionaire after another. And this one, practically a centenarian, my dear. So, going off to Reno, I suppose, for some liver spots and a bit of five-star buffet. Be sure to get the senior discount, dear.
Cute. Look who's talking.
Derventer chuckled.
Besides, what are my options? I've wasted enough time staring down teenagers for you. Where is the security in that? Chasing after some dreams that will never happen. The only thing that matters is l'argent. The money. That keeps me young, eh?
You don't need to tell me, my dear. Do your best. But I should tell you, things will be changing around here shortly.
Oh yes, here it comes. Ame returns with her brat, and you think they will lure it back? Another grand scheme? Mon Dieu. What are you thinking letting that little baboon loose downstairs? Nothing will change. It will be the same all over again. Catastrophe!
Lamal reached into a drawer in the vanity table and pulled out a silver flask. It shone in the dappled light, revealing an embossed symbol of a circular snake engulfing its tail. She shook it. The flask was empty. Her golden eyes flashed.
This has been empty for years now. Allez, face it, ma chère. I know yours must almost be empty as well. You've had a quarter century to come up with something better, and we all know how that turned out. Have you seen Philgrave lately?
She ceased her stricture upon appraising Derventer's hardening expression.
Don't you worry. It's all going to go according to plan this time. And that little baboon, as you put it, will change everything.
Meanwhile, far below, the Belfair's new tea girl was yawning in the supply room. After the doctor's announcement about her summer job the previous night, Yuki had barricaded herself in her room, falling asleep while waiting for Tina to reappear. She realized that house ghosts didn't keep to a regular schedule. Then her day had begun very early that morning with the doctor standing over her while saying goodbye. An emergency meeting with some colleagues required her immediate attention back at the Kogiyama Corporation in Tokyo. The doctor had assured her she would only be gone a few days. Yuki had received a cell phone, for emergencies only, as well as very firm instructions that she was to mind Mrs. Flack and to try to have fun. After that, Yuki had managed a few more hours of sleep until she was shocked awake by a delightful combination of noisy jackhammers from the street below and another of Mrs. Flack's rise and shines. At least this time, she had knocked first. Mrs. Flack had gotten Yuki fed and dressed, and then showed her the shortcut down to the Belfair. They had taken the stairs instead of the elevator. They walked down one flight. This landing was identical to the one above, except it had been decked out in blood-red carpets and a number of mirrors. Mrs. Flack had pressed a finger to her lips.
"That's the way to Mr. DeVinter's rooms. We should be quiet. He's very sensitive to noise."
She led Yuki through a small door at the end of the landing, and then down a steep and narrow staircase until they arrived in the Belfair supply room far below. Apparently, Mrs. Flack had done her best to make the bare room feel homey. There was overstuffed furniture slip-covered in cabbage roses, which seemed inconsistent with the always-in-black Mrs. Flack. The warm glow of a few well-placed lamps offset the rows of industrial shelving crammed with cleaning supplies. Currently, Yuki's head seemed to remain in a persistent fog that wouldn't lift. She wanted to curl into a ball and fall asleep on Mrs. Flack's comfy-looking sofa, but the uniform's stiff fabric held her upright, firmly at attention. Yes, that's right. The uniform. The summer job that the doctor and Mrs. Flack had arranged came complete with an embarrassing costume that Mrs. Flack had seen to personally. As Yuki's vision cleared, she was mortified as she looked into the full-length mirror. Mrs. Flack fussed with the enormous bow at the back of the dress while mumbling comments through a mouthful of pins. Mrs. Flack's creation was comprised of black satin, too many ruffles, and about a mile of white fluffy tulle. Yuki tried to smooth down the skirt, which stood out like an enormous tutu, but the material was so stiff it wouldn't budge. She thought she looked like a demented ballerina. When Mrs. Flack was finally satisfied with the final adjustments, she produced a formidable-looking hairbrush and pulled Yuki's hair back into a ponytail, trying to brush it smooth. However, Yuki's Tokyo haircut resisted and kept falling out of the ribbon that Mrs. Flack struggled to tie into a bow. Flack stood back and appraised her work.
"Well, I'm not sure. It's not quite what I had imagined."
"You mean you weren't going for a demented ballerina?"
Yuki thought, as another chunk of her hair escaped the ribbon and stood straight up. Mrs. Flack registered Yuki's less-than-thrilled expression.
It might be a tad young for you. Maybe we'll try something different."
Yuki stepped behind a changing screen next to the sofa and gingerly removed the overwrought creation. When she was back in her own clothes, she returned to find Mrs. Flack's mood had gone somewhat peevish. The clipboard had reappeared, and Mrs. Flack's pen made a question mark next to uniform on her list of things to do. A rather tall man breezed in through the double doors, interrupting the proceedings. Mr. DeVinter smiled warmly and stooped slightly to shake Yuki's hand.
"Ah, Miss O'Malley. So you grace our little workshop at last. Welcome, welcome."
Yuki's eyes met DeVinter's with a flash of recognition. The tall man in the faded photo. It was him. She was sure of it. But how could that be possible? He was standing right in front of her and didn't appear to look a day over 30. DeVinter seemed to take Yuki's silent stare in stride. He turned his attention to Mrs. Flack.
"So is that the creation you've been slaving over all this time?"
DeVinter nodded at the explosion of tulle hanging from the changing screen. Mrs. Flack quavered slightly and held her clipboard closer to her.
"Well, that didn't quite come out as I'd planned. Maybe with a few alterations."
Yuki chuckled to herself while she thought.
"If by alterations you mean throwing it onto a cheery fire, we're in business."
Mr. DeVinter raised an eyebrow and looked at Yuki as if she'd said it out loud. His gaze unsettled her and she dropped her eyes, suddenly becoming fascinated with the pattern on Mrs. Flack's sofa. DeVinter clapped his hands together.
"Well, much to do, much to do. Carry on, ladies."
He turned to leave and shot Mrs. Flack a look.
"And let's do try to stay on schedule, Flack. Busy day tomorrow, you know. And don't forget to see to those beastly boxes. Halliday's gone and left them everywhere. The situation's becoming simply intolerable."
He made a flourish with his hand and exited through the swinging double doors. Mrs. Flack seemed to steel herself, and her manner became very businesslike.
"So, being that we're closed today, it will be a perfect opportunity for you to familiarize yourself with everything. We will be starting with the tea."
Mrs. Flack produced a shopping bag and began unloading small square boxes printed with Chinese characters.
"Since Mr. DeVinter insisted we stick with tradition, I managed to find the same tea your grandmother used. Only one place in the city still sells it."
Mrs. Flack looked askance at the copper and brass contraption in the corner of the room.
He also refuses to shell out for as much as a new tea kettle, so we'll have to use that thing.
She handed Yuki a tattered book.
Here's the manual for the tea maker. Look it over. Mr. Holliday, checked it out and says everything is in good working order. Though I can't imagine how. It's been ages since we've used it.
Mrs. Flack gathered up the many folds of tulle and shoved the uniform unceremoniously into a garment bag. She turned to leave with her clipboard under her arm.
Well, get on with it. I'll be out at reception making a few phone calls.
She then disappeared through the swinging double doors. Once Yuki was alone, the silence rushed in around her. Outside the rosy glow of Mrs. Flack's lamps, she noticed the dark and rough walls of gray concrete. She looked at the various colored chemicals crowding the metal shelves that towered over her, standing like monoliths.
Can anyone say dungeon?
She took a seat on Mrs. Flack's sofa.
If I gotta read a book just to make tea, I may as well be comfortable.
Yuki read the manual's cover, The Whip Force and Golden, fully mechanized deluxe tea maker, U.S. patent 1885.
Golden? As in Crowley Golden?
She looked quizzically over at the ancient tea maker, then returned to the manual. She flipped through page after page of lengthy explanations and technical diagrams. The book was very old, and the type was badly faded, practically illegible. It seemed more like blueprints than actual instructions. Finally, on the back cover, Yuki found the at-a-glance startup guide. She got to her feet, thinking,
"May as well get it over with."
The tea maker consisted of a large, polished brass cylinder that stood taller than Yuki. Numerous pipes jutted off of it at odd angles, and there were way too many gauges and valves to keep track of. Parked next to the tea maker and attached by one of the smaller pipes was a wooden trolley complete with a brass samovar sitting on top of it. The trolley's dark wood gleamed, and the brass handles and shiny spindle wheels had obviously been polished recently. Several teacups and saucers were stacked next to the samovar, each emblazoned with a large gold letter B. Yuki referred back to her guide. Even the easy version of the instructions seemed awfully complicated. Plus, she had some trouble deciphering the badly faded print. Then she noticed something written in the margin in pencil. Just hit autofill.
Autofill?
Yuki scanned over the dials and gauges, and then she saw it, right in front of her, actually. Next to a large blank dial, she found a black button marked autofill. She pressed it, and nothing happened. Yuki paused, considering. She was about to reach out and press it again when the tea maker sputtered to life. The dial glowed yellow and flickered. There was a metallic clank, and then the sound of water filling inside the enormous kettle. Filling appeared on the glowing dial. Then there was a rapid clicking noise and a sudden whoosh. Yuki felt a blast of heat from below the kettle. A tiny bell pinged, and the dial switched to heating. It seemed to Yuki that heating all that water would take a while, so she returned to the sofa and perused Mrs. Flack's magazine selection, which sadly only seemed to feature red books from 1977 and earlier. After some time, the water in the kettle was boiling away. The heat shut off automatically, and a little green light came on next to a round metal flap near the top of the tea maker. Yuki heard a click, and the little flap swung open on its hinge, sending out a cloud of escaping steam. Another click sent several tea bags tumbling down a wire chute, popping into the top of the tea maker. The dial switched to brewing. The room began to fill with the fragrant aroma of the steeping tea. It smelled woodsy and flowery, reminding Yuki of something that she couldn't quite put her finger on. After several minutes, there was another loud metallic click, and the trolley shuddered slightly. The samovar filled itself with the freshly brewed tea. When it was full, the flow stopped automatically. The small pipe that connected the urn to the tea maker retracted, and the dial clicked to serve with three pings of the tiny bell. The trolley rolled forward, and the tea maker fell silent. Yuki marveled at the ingeniousness of it.
"Well now, would you look at that? And they said it was an old pile of scrap."
Yuki turned to see Mr. Holliday helping himself to one of the teacups off of the trolley. He filled it from the samovar, sipped it, then made a sour face and set down the teacup.
"Well, I'll tell you, kid, at least the old contraption's working. Though I never could drink this bilge when your grandmother made it either."
He gave the tea trolley a little nudge.
"You make sure you watch yourself out there.
The last thing you need to do is plow over one of these old bats with a runaway tea trolley.
Yuki smirked, and Mr. Halliday smiled, until Mrs. Flack's voice came over the loudspeaker overhead.
Miss O'Malley, to the front desk, please.
Mr. Halliday winced slightly, gathered his toolbox, and held one of the swinging doors open.
Well, Miss O'Malley, I'd be getting used to that if I were you.
Yuki left the tea maker manual on the sofa and followed Joe out into the corridor. They walked down a long, mirrored hallway. About halfway down the corridor was another set of double doors. Mr. Halliday turned, pressing a finger to his lips. When they had walked a few steps, Mr. Halliday gestured back and whispered,
"That there is DeVinter's studio. When he's around, you make sure you keep it nice and quiet, or he'll go screwy."
Yuki nodded. Was it just a little odd that everyone was shushing her about DeVinter? When they had reached the end of the corridor, Mr. Halliday stopped and made a little bow.
"Well, I better get back to work, kiddo."
He pressed the edge of the last of the mirrored panels. It clicked and swung open, revealing a dark stairwell.
"Yeah, his lordship has me working a long list of chores today, that's for sure."
Joe nodded goodbye and disappeared. Yuki's eyes followed him as he clumped down into the darkness.
"Miss O'Malley, to the front desk."
Yuki flinched, turned, and followed the voice. She walked out into a large columned room full of clusters of slightly threadbare 80s seating and a few sad potted palms. Mrs. Flack sat behind a circular counter in the center of the room. Yuki had to do a double take. Mrs. Flack's head was thrown back, taking a tremendous gulp out of a small silver flask. Then, perhaps hearing Yuki's footsteps, Mrs. Flack's head jerked forward, and with a flash of silver, the flask disappeared into her handbag. Yuki arched an eyebrow as she approached, then sighed, noting the conspicuous pile of empty packing boxes that awaited her. Mrs. Flack turned, rotating on her chair, wearing a thin smile. She stood, raised a hinged portion of the counter, and stepped through.
"Please don't ever make me have to call you twice."
Her voice carried the faintest trace of severity while she gathered up her clipboard.
"The ladies who come here do not like to be kept waiting. They get what they want when they want it."
Then her expression softened slightly, and her bright red lips almost hinted at a smile.
"And considering what we charge them, I can't say I blame them."
Behind the counter, Yuki could see a long row of glowing monitors and several switches and buttons blinking back at her. Everything was made of beige plastic and seemed a little antiquated, like it had had its prime in the 80s. A slamming door suddenly boomed from overhead, followed by the sound of high heels clacking down the marble staircase. Yuki shrank away from the overly made-up blonde woman across the foyer, trailing a white mink and a wave of pungent perfume that actually made her eyes sting a little.
"Oh, goodbye, Audra. Have a nice day."
The woman ignored Mrs. Flack completely, but shot a quick look at Yuki. Her golden eyes were blazing. The hair stood up on the back of Yuki's neck as the woman disappeared through the sliding glass doors. Mrs. Flack became all businesslike again and began the official tour. She showed Yuki around, pointing out the glass sliding doors that led to the underground parking garage, the various seating areas for the clients, and something that Mrs. Flack had called the ladies' lounge, which just turned out to be the restroom. They climbed the marble staircase and entered a leaded glass conservatory. Sadly, it showed the same signs of age as the rest of the place. Gnarled and overgrown trees outside obscured any view. Mrs. Flack was about to embark on her rather sizable list of Belfair protocols when a sudden beeping from the direction of the counter sounded, bringing the tour to an abrupt end. Mrs. Flack dashed back behind the counter and flicked a switch under one of the monitors. It showed someone leaning out of a black Mercedes that was parked outside the Belfair's iron gate.
"Oh, hello, Mr. Philgrave."
Mrs. Flack pressed a button, and the gate on the monitor swung open. Yuki's stomach leapt.
Philgrave?
Hadn't Tina mentioned that name before? And then Yuki remembered.
"Death by makeover."
Mrs. Flack stared fixedly at the monitor and flicked the switch again. The gate closed behind the car, and Mrs. Flack appeared concerned.
"That's odd. I don't think we were expecting him. He usually visits after hours."
She picked up a chunky princess phone receiver and then motioned behind her.
"I'd like you to break down all those boxes back there. Then find Mr. Halliday. He'll show you where to put them. We'll find something else for you to do after that."
Mrs. Fleck turned her back and spoke quietly into the receiver. A moment later, while Yuki attended to the imposing stack of cardboard, Mr. DeVinter suddenly emerged. He seemed a little flustered and dashed across the foyer towards Mrs. Flack.
I've got a few things upstairs that I'd like you to nip over to the dry cleaners. Could you do it now? I think we can handle things here for a while.
DeVinter smiled over at Yuki while Mrs. Flack let out an audible sigh. Mrs. Flack had been shooed away by the time the glass door slid open. A young man in a black overcoat entered, nudging along a small figure in from the parking garage. Yuki gathered that this must be Philgrave. The man was tall, pale, and very thin. His dark, deep-set eyes were partially hidden by a few lank pieces of hair that had escaped from his greasy black pompadour. Philgrave was holding the hand of a sleepy-looking boy that Yuki guessed was no more than 10. Mr. DeVinter greeted the pair somewhat hesitantly. Yuki pretended to be occupied with her boxes while DeVinter led the boy across the foyer towards his studio, with Philgrave trailing behind. Yuki noticed Philgrave walked with a slight stoop, which seemed strange for a young man. He was sweaty and looked a little green around the gills. He muttered to DeVinter, scratching at his forearm through his coat as they walked along. Just as Yuki realized that she was staring, Philgrave looked over. The whites of his eyes glowed with a strange opalescence. His gaze had a hollow, hungry quality that made Yuki uneasy. His eyes lingered only for a moment before darting back to DeVinter. Yuki turned away, her heart thumping as they disappeared down the mirrored corridor. Once she had flattened and stacked all the boxes, Yuki considered what to do next. Mrs. Flack was nowhere to be seen since she had disappeared all in a dither with Mr. DeVinter's dry cleaning. The Belfair was quiet. Yuki frowned, thinking what she had to do next. Mrs. Flack had said to find Mr. Halliday, which didn't sound too bad just then, but then her heart sank, remembering where that would lead her. Yuki crossed the foyer towards the mirrored corridor. She poked her head around the corner and listened. Nobody seemed to be around. The long corridor was silent. Yuki considered the double doors in the distance that led to DeVinter's studio. She wondered if trying to quietly sneak a peek would be worth the risk of getting caught by Mr. Philgrave and his oddly glowing eyes. The mirrored panel that Mr. Halliday had gone through earlier was still ajar. Yes, Mr. Halliday. She would have to find him and tell him what was going on. Mr. Halliday would know what to do. Yuki cautiously crept through the doorway and descended down the dark stairwell. The stairs dropped steeply, and there was only one light bulb hanging from a bare wire to light her way.
Mr. Halliday?
She felt along the wall as she descended, and pulled back suddenly, recoiling from the damp. The walls were covered in fine Mudahar tiles like a brightly colored basket weave full of stars. The dim light reflected the condensation off their glazed surface. As she went down, step by step, the air grew warmer and thick with humidity. The stairwell opened to a large tiled room with a high vaulted ceiling. In the faint light, she was able to make out a few dim shapes. A large sunken pool sat in the center of the room. She could hear the slow dripping sound of water somewhere, and then the smell reached her nose. That faint, woodsy, flowery scent. The same scent as the tea that was busily brewing away upstairs. She looked down and saw the slow, steamy rivulet of tea filling the pool.
That's odd.
Then something else caught her attention. In the far corner of the room, on the other side of the pool, several tiles had been broken off, and the wall was partially dug away, forming a sizable crack. It looked like someone had dug it out in a hurry. A muffled rattling noise seemed to emanate from the hole in the wall. It seemed to start and stop in short bursts. Yuki realized she was beneath the street level, and the sound was the workmen's jackhammers on the street corner high above.
Mr. Halliday?
When the jackhammers were silent, she thought she could hear a voice, but decided it was one of the workmen from the street above. She called out once more, just to be sure.
Mr. Halliday?
And this time she was answered. It was a soft, pathetic sound, the faintest mewling cry echoing out from the crack in the wall. It sounded like a poor lost kitten trapped in that horribly scary place. Yuki moved closer.
Here, kitty kitty.
There was the sound of something's bulk shifting from inside the crack.
That's a good kitty. Come here. Come here.
And then she saw something long, black, and slender uncurl onto the floor. With a resonant purr, it brushed back and forth, then curled back inside the crack.
Awfully long tail for a kitten.
Then there was another series of strange shifting sounds from inside the crack, like something was slowly dragging itself along. Something in the back of Yuki's mind seemed to stir, something that had slumbered and was now struggling to awaken. The pool of tea, the tiled room with the vaulted ceiling, it all seemed dully familiar. But the harder she tried to grasp at the connection, the more elusive it became. And then there was another cry. That strange, mewling cry. A black, hulking form began to emerge from the crack in the wall, but it was considerably larger than just a cat. Something that looked like a tail uncurled again and gingerly explored the floor. And then, with a prickle of shock, Yuki saw another tail emerge, and then another.
Tentacles?
Yuki began to back away until she realized her heels had bumped up against the raised rim of the pool. More thin tentacles stretched themselves across the floor towards her. Yuki tried to sidestep her way around the pool towards the stairs, but found her feet had become very heavy and difficult to maneuver. She wanted to yell for help, but found her voice stuck in her throat. The smell of the flowery tea, the pool, that mewling cry, the long, thin tentacles grasping for her. The images swam before her eyes with a dull ache. As Yuki managed to reach the bottom of the stairs, her vision narrowed. A voice inside her head whispered,
"Sleep."
The bare light bulb seemed to shrink away, and Yuki crumpled into a heap.
I tell ya, I don't know what happened to her. I found her like that when I got back down here. Are you sure she's gonna be okay?
Yes, yes, I'm sure she's fine. Just get her back upstairs, won't you?
Mr. Derventer seemed unconcerned as he scanned the broken tiles in the corner of the room.
So, there was nothing else down here, then?
Noting Mr. Halliday's confused expression, Derventer nodded and waved him away. Mr. Halliday carried an unconscious Yuki up the stairs, and Derventer followed, his eyes still darting about, obviously looking for something. So, Chapter 7 comes to a close. I'd like to thank guest voices on this episode, Jennifer Viale as Mrs. Flack, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and at comptech.com. For more info, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 8, and until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.